Let's just finish up what we didn't get a chance to complete on yesterday's daf, which is Peyom and Beis, and we're up to the Mishnah, which is about 15 lines up before the end of the Amud. And again, we're talking about the minimum Shiurim for Hotzah and Shabbos, Adoma. We're talking now about a type of red clay that was used to make seals. Kechosem hamartzofim divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's opinion is that the minimum shear of a seal made out of this clay is the seal of martzofim. So martzofim are sellers, and they have large bags and containers, and they would seal these cargo sacks. That's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. And the Chachamim say, Kechosem ha'igros. The Chachamim have a smaller shear, that means the machmir, and they would seal the letter to make sure that no one would read the letter, and they would seal it with this kind of a red clay. So the Chachamim being machmir here. Zevel v'chol hadak. Now we're talking about certain types of materials used as fertilizers. One is called zevel. It's actually fertilizer, probably made of feces. And chol hadak is fine sand. So what's the shear for these kinds of fertilizers? According to Rabbi Akiva, kidei lezabel kelach shel kruv. In other words, if let's say you have a stalk of kruv is kreut, is cabbage, and you want to fertilize one single stalk, that's the shear for zevel and chol hadak. Chachamim omrim, chachamim disagree, and they say kedei lezabel kresha. Kresha, koresh, is a leek in English. So it's a single plant. And here, the Chachamim are being machmir because this is a smaller amount of fertilizer to fertilize a leek than to fertilize a cabbage stalk. Chol hagas. Okay, chol is sand. As we said before, gas means thick. So we have thick sand. Kidei liten al melo kaf sid. And apparently, the Gemara says they used to mix lime and sand together. So if let's say you have a bowl of lime, and now you want to add, again you have to know the exact shear, you want to add some of this coarse sand. How much coarse sand would you add to this bowl of lime? Kanif, you take out a reed on Shabbos, kedei lasos kulmus, to make a quill out of it. Again, you're going to have to figure out what's the size of the quill. Im haya ove omerusas, and if you cannot use this reed for a quill because it's cracked or it's very thick, so then the shears kedei levashel bo beitza kala shebebeitzim. Then you use the reed as fuel to create a fire so that you can cook an egg. And it's the most easily cooked of eggs. What makes it so easily cooked? It's trufa. It's already been beaten. Unasuna be'ilfis. And it's already been placed into a skillet. And so it doesn't take that much fuel in order to cook this egg. The egg is almost ready to be cooked. And that's going to be the shear for a reed that cannot be used as a quill. Now, let's keep in mind that if you have a quill, then carrying the quill itself will be chayv from Lechus Shabbos. And we don't even have to ask exactly what the size of the quill is. You already have it functioning as a quill. The Gemara now analyzes the Mishnah. Ad melo kaf sid. And we spoke about the case of coarse sand and you mix this coarse sand with lime. And the Braisa teaches us Tana Kidei Litein Alpi Kaf Shel Sayadim. Right? A Sayad is a person who's in charge of plastering. And he has a container in which he mixes sand with lime in the process of creating his plaster. And the Gemara is going to explain later on that sand was often mixed with lime to be used as plaster, and the addition of sand would somehow strengthen the plaster and increase its value. So the Mishnah teaches us that the minimum shear for taking out sand is a significant amount of sand that could be added as an ingredient into this bowl of plaster for the sake of the plaster. Man tana dechol mailele lesid, who is the tana who holds that adding this kind of a sand substance to mix it with the lime is beneficial, so that when you are beautifying your house with this kind of very sophisticated plaster, you've added to make that plaster this sand. Om Rav Chisda Rav Yehuda hi. And Rabbi Yehuda should be understood from a different context, and that's the context of Zecha L'Churban, the certain things that the Rabbanon prohibited after the destruction of the Migdash because they wanted you to avoid beautifying your house too much. The Sanya we learned about Rabbi Yehuda Sheet and Abraisalo Yosid Odom as Beso Besid. A person is enjoined from plastering the walls of his house with lime, because this would beautify his house too much. It would be too decorative, and we want him to remember the Churban Abayis. So don't use this white kind of lime plaster. Elim kein irev bo teven ochol, unless he changes its color, and instead of being white, he darkens it by adding straw or sand. And in such a case, the plaster is mutter, and it's not so beautiful and decorative that it would undermine his kiyum avel shebelev to remember the Churban Abayis. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tevin Mutter, if you mix together with this lime to create the plaster, straw, that's okay. The straw will detract from the beautiful appearance of the plaster, but chol is usur. If you mix into the plaster this kind of a sand, that's prohibitive. Nesha hu traskesid. It creates a very strong kind of plaster. And it enhances not only the strength of the plaster, but in a certain sense, that extra strength of the plaster offsets the brightness, the white color, that has been diminished as a result of the addition of sand. So basically, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we see that adding sand to this lime mixture is beneficial, and it strengthens the mixture and the plaster that results. And that reflects our Mishnah that sets up the shear of coarse sand as enough to place into the opening of the plasterer's bowl in order to create plaster by mixing this coarse sand with lime. Rava Amar Filu Temer Abonan. You can even reconcile our Mishnah with the Sheet of the Rabbanon, who permit the use of a mixture of sand to lime with regard to the Zecha L'Churban, because Kilkulo Zeo Tikuno, even though the sand certainly enhances the lime and strengthens it, but nevertheless, the sand impairs the appearance of the lime. So in other words, it's still dark and it's not white, so therefore they permitted it. But fundamentally they agree that sand added to lime is significant and it enhances the mixture. Kana, in the case of a reed, kidei lasos kul, is to create a quill. Now what's the size of this quill? Tana, we learned in a braisa, kulmus hamagil kishrei etzba osav. In other words, if he holds on to this quill between his thumb and his forefinger, it will reach the joints of his finger. That's how tall it is. That's the size of this quill. So the Gemara has now a suffix, boy Rav Ashi Kesha, which joints of the writer's finger you're talking about. There's the lower joint, which is closer to the finger, and then there's the middle joint. And the lower joint is called the Kesher Elyon, and the other possibility is Kesher Tachton, the lower joint, which is mamish in the middle of your finger. That makes it into a larger quill. And the Gemara answers, take, we have no answer. The Mishnah states, if it was thick or cracked, then that reed cannot be used for a quill, and the size of the reed for hotzah would be if you could easily cook an egg with it, and it could serve as fuel. Tana, we learned in a brisa, trufa b'shemen u'nesuna b'ilfes. The Mishnah refers to an egg that already was mixed, it was already beaten with oil, it was already placed into a pot, and it's ready to cook really fast. So we don't need that much fuel, and therefore we don't need a large reed. Amale mar bered Ravina libre. So the son of Ravina says to his son, Mishmielach beitza kala maihi. What kind of an egg is an easily cooked egg? Amale, he answers him, biasa de tziltzala. The egg of a small bird. And the Aruch identifies this as a dove, the egg of a dove. So Mar turns to his son and he says, my taima, what's the reason that you chose the egg of a small dove? And the answer is, Mishum Dizutra. It's a very small egg and it cooks very quickly. So Mar, Breit Ravina, asks him, Ema de tzift. Did Sifrita, how do you know you're referring to an egg of a dove? Maybe it's the egg of a hummingbird, which is even a smaller egg, Ishtik. His son did not have an answer. Amalei, but then he said to him, Midi Shmielach Baha. Maybe you heard something in this matter. Amalei, Hachi Amar Rav Sheshes. This is what I heard from Rav Sheshes. Beitzas Tarnagolis, that the easily cooked egg is the egg of a hen. V'amai korele beitza kala. Why do they consider it as an easily cooked egg? Shiru chachamim. The chachamim measured and determined that ein lecha beitza kala levashel. There's no egg of any bird that's easier to cook. Yoser more than the beitza of tarnagolas, the egg of a hen. So there may be smaller eggs than the egg of a hen, but Chazal determined, with their scientific analysis, that no egg, no matter how small it is, can cook faster than a hen's egg. So the son of Mar Breid Ravina asks his father, Umayshna kol shiri shabbos kigro geres, v'hocha kibbeitza. Why is it that in terms of the measure for hotzav, all foods, the shear is always that of a dried fig, meaning of a grogeres, and here we're talking about a beitza. The shear is different in this case of a reed used for fuel, and it's the shear of an egg. And presumably, you know, an egg is larger than a dried fig. Amalei hachi amar Rav Nachman. Here's what I heard from Nachman: grogeres mi beitza kala. If he took out a reed that's large enough to cook not the entire egg, but the equivalent of a dried fig of a grogeres' volume of an egg. So the Mishnah doesn't mean to say that he needs enough reed to fuel a fire that cooks an entire egg. It's enough if he has fuel that would cook a portion of the egg, and that portion of the egg is equivalent to the amount of a grogeres, of a dried fig. That I don't know. Let me just work it all out because I have other shiurim. And so we're up to the Mishnah and the Daf Pei Aleph. And the Mishnah again lists the minimum amount of shiurim for the Meleches Hotzah. And first we're talking about Etzem. In those days, they used to use bone in order to create different kinds of
utensils. And the Tanakhama says, Kidei lasos tarvod. They could actually make a spoon, a measuring spoon, out of bone. And they would sort of dig into the bone and they would round out a spoon. Rabbi Yehuda speaks about a lock. And they used to make a lock either entirely out of bone, or sometimes the lock was made out of wood, but the inner mechanism of the lock was made out of bone. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says that the shear, the minimum shear for bone, is kidei lasos mimenu chaf, to create a lock. And as we said before, we'll have to see if this lock is referring to an entire utensil, which is a lock that would then be placed into the door, or we're talking about a lock that was made from wood, but the inner mechanism was made out of teeth, out of bone. So we'll get to that in the Gemara, Mirtz Hashem. What would be the minimum shear for zchuchit, for glass? Kidei ligrar bo rosh hakarkar. So this takes us back to the old weaving discussion. And there was a kind of a utensil that was used by the oreg who would weave. And sometimes what would happen was that the shasi threads, those are the threads that went the length from the bottom to the top, many threads. Sometimes they would get entangled and he would need a kind of a utensil, which is called a karkar, in order to separate one thread that got tangled from another. Now this particular kli, this utensil which is called a karkar, in English they call it a pick, P-I-C-K, had to have a very sharp point, a head, a sharp head to it. And they would use glass to sharpen the point of that pick. And what would be the minimum size for carrying zchuchit? It would be using that glass, that piece of glass, as a sharpener, like we have a pencil sharpener. This would be a karkar sharpener. Now, in the case of a tsrar or an evan, what's the minimal size of a stone that has some sort of designated function? And here we have machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Tanakhama says, "Kidei lizrok bi'of," and all he needs is a very small kind of a stone to throw at a bird and scare away the bird. But Rabbi Elazar says, "No, kidei lizrok bi'behema," you need a larger stone to throw at an animal. And the Gemara is going to tell us later that we have to somehow impact on this bird or on this animal in such a way that it gets all shooken up and it screams, it yells because it got hit by this stone.
Just one question, please.
Sure.
Why is it significant to have different measures for different items for hutzah? Why can't it be one volume or size for hutzah?
So every shear is what's called chashivus. And chashivus is never objective, it's always relative. You have one item, we have a smaller amount, and it could be used, and therefore it has a function, it's chashivus, it has chashivus, it's significant, somebody would put it away and store it for future use. You have another item, another object, another material, which, at a smaller volume, it's just meaningless, it's useless, nobody would even bother with it. And therefore, a large chunk of Masechta Shabbos is dedicated to the concept of chashivus with regard to shear of hotzah. It's interesting that we have 39 malachas, but there's not one malacha on the list besides hotzah that gets so much publicity because we want to set up the shear of hotzah. Now, Jerry, there is one case where you're absolutely right and it's objective, and that's foodstuff. In foodstuff, we don't differentiate between one food and another, and that is an absolute objective shear, which is called kigrogeres, a dried fig. But when we get to physical materials, every material has to be judged by its function. So what would I do with ink, for example? I would store away ink because I could write two letters with it. I can store away a shard of glass because I could use it as a sharpener. And therefore, in every case, we have to know exactly what the shear is.
Thank you.
So the Gemara asks the following question. In the case of Rabbi Yehuda, and we're talking about bone, he says that you're going to create a lock out of a bone. And therefore the shear is not the small spoon that we spoke about, which is the Tanakhama's view of a tarvad, but rather the shear is to create something larger than a spoon. It's a lock that you would put in your door. Now what that means is, as soon as the shear becomes larger, and this you have to just memorize, then you're always being makil, you're being more lenient, because you're saying you're not chayav for hotzah unless it reaches that larger volume. So lemeimer, should we say, based on our Mishnah, the shiura de Rabbi Yehuda nafish, that Rabbi Yehuda expands the size, in this case of bone, and less than that larger size, you're not chayav, because you need the size to create a lock. Hakaimelon, we have a tradition that shiura de Rabbana nafish, that we're going to have many occasions where there's a debate between Rabbanon and Rabbi Yehuda, and the debate is very consistent. The Rabbanon are always going to be the lenient ones who have a larger shear. Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, well, even though the common person would only use that function that has a larger shear, but since there are individuals, and it's not an insignificant minority, who will use that material for a smaller amount, for a different kind of an object, or a different function that requires the smaller shear, therefore Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, I'm going to be machmir, and we're going to set up the shear based on the chashivus that's not so common, it's not for the average person, but nevertheless it is representative of a certain slice, if you will, of the population. Now here, we find an exception to the rule. After all, you know, Rabbi Yehuda is being makil here, and he's setting up a larger shear, the bone that creates an entire utensil, which we call the lock. Omar Ula, no, you misunderstood Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is talking about chafei posachas. He's talking about the teeth of the lock, which keep the lock in place. He's not talking about the lock itself. The lock itself is made of wood. It's not made of bone. It's not made of teeth. But there's the teeth of the lock, and that's much smaller than the tarvad of the chachamim. So Rabbi Yehuda, consistent with his view, is machmir in Shabbos, and a smaller shear will be enough to generate a liability and a chiyuv chatos. And now, we're going to take this distinction between the lock itself and the teeth, which is the inner mechanism of the lock, and we're going to apply it to Tumah Vitara. Because when it comes to Tumah Vitara, the Torah tells us that a kli, a utensil, is susceptible to Kabbalas Tumah. Tana Rabbanan, Chafei Posachas Tahorim. If we're talking about the chafe of the posachas, which means that the teeth inside the mechanism of the lock, not the lock as a whole, then that's not makabel tumah, because it's not a kli. It's only something that could serve in the future if you take this mechanism, this inner mechanism of teeth, and you attach it to a lock, then it becomes a kli. But right now it's not a kli. However, kavan b'posachas, posachas is the entrance, when you take the lock and you attach it to the door, at that point, t'meim. Why? Because now you have a full kli. You've now put it into a lock as a mechanism, and you've attached the lock, it's ready to go, so to speak. V'shel gal. Now we're not talking about the entrance to a house, which is called a delis, a door, but we're talking about a gate. Is afal pisha chibron bedelis, even though he's already fixed it to the door, v'kavon b'masmerim, and he secured it down to the gate, the door of the gate. And therefore you would say, well, it's a full-fledged kli. I mean, not only did he put it into the doorway, but he also, you know, nailed it down. So it's obviously a permanent structure. Nevertheless, tahorim. Why? Because kol amachubar lekarka hareu kekarka. once you have something that's part of a door, and the door is attached to the karka, like the gate in the case of an entranceway, then the halacha is that karka is never makabel tuma. It's not susceptible to tuma. And not only that, anything that's mechuvah lekarka, which is connected to the karka in a permanent way, is also no longer a kli, and if it's not makabel tuma, it's called karka. Now we go on to talk about a glass, a piece of glass. And we say that the shear for glass is kadei ligrar bo, in order to use it for sharpening a karkar, which is the pick that's used by the weaver. Tana, we have a brice that says schuchis. Sometimes schuchis is spelled with a samach at the beginning, sometimes with a zion at the beginning. But they both have the same meaning, glass. Kidei liftsoa ba shnei nimin ka'achas. Now, what happens is that sometimes when the weaver puts these shasi threads that go up and down onto his loom, very often there are pieces of threads that come out of the other threads and have to be removed. So he cuts two threads with a piece of shard of glass that has a sharp part to it, and that's the shear for Hotzah. So we have two different shiurim now. We have the Mishnah that speaks about using the glass as a sharpener for a certain pick, and now we have the Braisa that says that you use the glass in order to cut and slice threads. Now the Meiri says that although these are two different functions, but nevertheless, they have the identical size, and therefore the shear is the same. So although the Mishnah expressed it in one way, and the Braisa in another way, they are both referring to the exact same size of a piece of glass. Tsroro Evan. Now he's taking a stone, or a pebble, and the Mishnah establishes that the shear is to throw it at a bird. Kidei lizrok bi'ov. But Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yaakov, he says no. It's kidei lizrok bi'behema, to throw it at an animal. Omer Rabbi Yaakov, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, v'hu she margeshes ba. When you're talking about a stone that could be thrown at either a bird, according to Tanakama, or at an animal, according to Rabbi Lazar, then it has to have an impact on the animal. Margeshes, she, the animal, feels it. Maybe she lets out a scream, or she's startled and she starts jumping. You have to elicit some response from the animal. The kamashi uro, and what's the exact size of a stone? Tanya, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yaakov, Omer, if you need a stone that could startle an animal, it's got to be Mishkal Asura Zuz. It has to be weighty enough that if you put it on a scale with 10 Zuz, it would equalize the scale. So we're talking about a serious kind of a stone. And in that sense, Rabbi Elazar is the Mekil. He's lenient because, as we said before, Nafish Shiura, if the shear is larger, that's a leniency. You're not chayiv unless you take out that entire shear. Now, you know, if you're interested in names, I got a new one for you. One of the Chachamim at the time of the Talmud was Zonin. That was his name. Al Lebei Midrash. He went into the Beis Medrash. Amaluhu, and he said to the rabbis, Rabosai, Avanim shel beis hakisei shiurim bekama. So let me say a few words of introduction, because this topic that we're about to start, it's not the most aesthetically beautiful topic, but that's going to take us through the entire daf pei aleph, omen aleph and omen beis. Today we have toilet paper. You know, there was a time in which, not long ago, toilet paper was very scarce. But back in the time of the Gemara, to wipe the feces after they defecated, they needed stones. And they actually had different shapes of stones that they used. You know, some stones were a little bit smaller, and they used it to you know, to really go into, you know, close to the anal opening itself. Others were a little bit larger, and they would clean out some of the feces that got stuck on the outside of the anus, and then they had even larger stones that would clean the whole area. Now, a stone is typical muktzon Shabbos. But imagine that that's how they clean themselves. So the question is, how do we reconcile this? You know, you can't tell a person that during the course of Shabbos he has to defecate, if not once, twice, or more, that he can't use stones to wipe himself. They didn't have toilet paper in those days. But on the other hand, you're talking about muktzah. So what we're going to learn about today is a concept called kavod habrios, the dignity of man. And Chazal were very lenient whenever they could be. Again, you can't violate a doraisa for the sake of a dignity of man. And if a person finds out in the middle of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim that his outer cloak is shatnez, he's going to have to take it off. Maybe that's not so dignified. But for the sake of a drabbanon, not shatnez, but muktzah, drabbanon will be lenient and they'll allow you to take these stones and use them to clean yourself in the Beis HaKiseh, despite the fact that they're muktzah. And Zonin comes into the Beis Medrash and he says, well, you know, we have different sizes of stones that are used for this purpose of wiping oneself. How far did the Rabbanan go? What kind of stones, what size of stones were they willing to forego and trump the Isur Muktza? Amru lo kizayis ke'egos ukebetza. They would allow you to use three different stones. Each one has a different size. The largest of the three stones is the size of an olive. The second one, which is a bit smaller, is the size of an egos of a nut. And the third one is the size of an egg. So one second. So I'm sorry, I may have said it the wrong way. Let me just repeat, just make sure I said it right. Whatever I said before, it's either right or wrong, I don't know. What you start with is the smaller stones, right? So the smallest stone is the size of an olive. And that can get you into the rectal opening and begin the process of cleaning. Then you get to a larger stone, which is the size of a nut, until you get to the largest stone to cover the whole area around the rectal opening, and that's called kibetz, that's the size of an egg. And basically, the Chachamim are telling you that you're allowed to use any of those three stones, and that's the perfect way of wiping yourself, and that's going to be permitted, even though it's three full stones of muktzah. Now, Rashi offers a second interpretation of this whole Gemara of Zonin. We'll mention it as we go along. And Rashi says that the question of Zonin was not about muktzah, but rather about the shear of Hotzah. And how many stones, now we're counting up stones, would be required to have that chashivus of the shear of Hotzah. And the answer is, he's got to take out three stones, because less than three stones just won't do the job. It's not a good mop-up operation, if you pardon the phrase. So, in order to clean himself well, he has no less than three stones. And therefore, if he would carry less than these three stones out into Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, he would not be chayv, because it's less than a minimum shear. Amar Lahu. Now at this point, Zonin is not so comfortable with the Gemara's answer. V'chi turtani yachnis. When he goes to the washroom, what does he take, a scale with him? And he weighs out to see whether it's this size, the size of an olive, that size, it's the solid size of a nut, or it's this, you know, what it says. Are you asking him to measure? It's very difficult to say that these are the precise sizes of the stones that he's allowed to use for wiping himself, and there's no isur mukta. So as a result of Zonin's question, the Chachamim were in a, you know, they started debating it back and forth, and they realized that he's making a very excellent point. And Nimnu v'gamru, then they came to a decision, Melo Hayat. We're not going to restrict him to these specific three sizes of stones and allow only those and forego muktzah, but rather we're going to say whatever he can carry in his hand. A handful. So therefore, there's no precise, objective number of stones. We're going to tell him, take as many stones as you want and carry them. Later on, the Gemara is going to say that since he may need them again, so even if there's an excess amount of stones that he carries in his hand, well, he might need it for another defecation. Tanya, we learned it of Raisa, and here the two opinions, the Habamina before Zonin and the Maskona after Zonin raised his objection, are two opinions reflected in a Raisa. Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Kizayas, Ke'egos, Ukebeitza. These are the three stones that will allow him to move for the purpose of the bathroom, and those are three sizes. And Rabbi Shimba, Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Mishum Aviv. He says, in the name of his father, apparently he had a different tradition about Rabbi Yossi, Melo Hayat. Take out a full handful of stones. You know, I was thinking to myself, you'll laugh at me, but if a person, let's say, wanted to make sure that he has enough stones, you know, in the washroom, he should ask a friend of his who's twice his size and has a double size hand, he's got a small hand, to carry out the stones for him. Torah Rabbana, we learned in a brisa, Avonim Mikur Zolos. The stones that were designated for wiping were sharp. They had a certain shape to them. Again, you wouldn't put the point into your body because that's very dangerous, but you would smack it up on the side, but it came to a sharp end. Is mutala hachnis lebeis hakise. So these are the ones that you're allowed to take in on Shabbos to the bathroom. V'kamashi uron, Rav Meir omer ke'egos, Rav Yehuda omer ke'beitza. So now we have a braisa that records two shitos, which are against everything that we learned until now. We had only two possibilities. Either the three sizes of stones, or a handful of stones. Now we have two other shitos, and that's Rabbi Meir, who says ke'egos, that he's allowed to take the size of an egg, and Rabbi Yehuda omer kebeitza, the size of a nut, and Rabbi Yehuda says the size of an egg. Now, it doesn't say explicitly, but Rashi and others say that we're talking about three stones. So according to Rabbi Meir, three stones each is the size of a nut, and Rabbi Yehuda says three stones the size of an egg. These were the allowances that Chazal permitted for mukta for the sake of covered abrios. Or Avraham bar Papa Rav Chizda, kemachlokes kan, kach machlokes bi esrach. In other words, this machlokes about the minimum size of a stone that's not mukta because we're going to allow you to take it out on Shabbos to the bathroom, and whether it's ke'egos or kebeitza, you know, learn this well, because the same machlokas we're going to have in the case of an esrog, right? An esrog has to have a minimum size. It can't be too small. And we have a Mishnah in Masechta Sukkah that records a machlokas between the Tanoim, exactly what is the minimum size of an esrog. And that's in the third parak of Sukkah, Daf Lamed Dalit. Now, according to one opinion, Rabbi Meir, the esrog has to be the size of a nut, which we said is smaller than Rabbi Yehuda's size, which is an egg. Now, the Gemara is a little bit perplexed about the way Rav Papa presents this, because Rav Papa is telling us that if you want to understand the Mishnah of Esrog, learn up this sugya about stones that are not muktzah. So the Gemara says, Hasa Masnisin, Hacha Braisa. That Mishnah is a well-known Mishnah. Braisa was not well-known. There are different versions and traditions. So it doesn't make sense that you would tell me that learn this Braisa in order to understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah was well-known. Ela, but rather, let's reformulate the statement here of Raphram. Kemachlokas be'esrog, when you learn the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah in Esrog, about the minimum size of an Esrog, whether it's Rabbi Meir's a nut or it's Rabbi Yehuda's kibetza, an egg, then kach machlokas kan. And then you'll remember that you can apply the same two shitos here in the case of the Brice of Muktza. Om Rabbi Yehuda, Avolo es hapais. Okay. Now, in Babylonia, the ground was much softer, and as a result, the earth would crumble. So Rabbi Yehuda says that in Bavel, you're not allowed to use Karshine Bavalosa. The Karshine means, the, so to speak, the pebbles of Babylon, of Babylonia, you cannot use on Shabbos as a toilet paper to wipe yourself. And the reason for that is because it's not going to do a good job, it's going to crumble, and we need something more solid. So therefore, make sure you take stones and not these kinds of so-called pebbles of Babylon. Omar Rova, Osir Lemashmesh Bitzror B'Shabbos. Okay. Now, again, we're getting to some gory details. You know, I don't have to be embarrassed in front of Dr. Plotsky, because doctors have to deal with all sorts of aesthetically pleasing phenomenon. God created us with a human body. Not every part of the body is as beautiful as the others. And in the case of the rectal opening, when a person is having trouble, he's, let's call it, constipated. So what he does is mishmush. Mishmush means he stimulates the anal opening. And that allows the, you know, the large intestine and so forth, the rectum, to do its function. So Rava says that, you know, to take this small pebble and use it for mishmush purposes, he says that that's also on Shabbos. Kederach shememashmesh b'chol, even though he's allowed, he does it during the weekday. Now, what's the difference between Shabbos and the weekday? And the answer is that when you do this process of mishmush, apparently there's a fear that there are hairs growing in the anal area, and through mishmush he's going to remove some of those hairs. You know, later on we're going to talk about in another sugya about combing your hair on Shabbos and all sorts of situations where we're afraid that you might be cutting off hairs. Maskif lo marzutra. Marzutra says, I can't tolerate this statement of Rav. No way, no how. Listakin. The man is going to hold in his eliminations because he doesn't have this possibility of mishmush on Shabbos. Should he put his life into danger? And this is based on a Gemara that we once had earlier in Masechta Shabbos, that a person has to train himself to eliminate, because if he doesn't eliminate, then he can get a very, very bad disease, which the Gemara calls hydrokin. And that we had earlier in Masechta Shabbos, or maybe it was in Masechta Brocha, sorry. Anyway, hydrokin is a very, very dangerous condition, and it's impossible, says Marzutra, to maintain this statement of Rava and tell me on Shabbos that he can't do this mishmush in order to facilitate his elimination. So the Gemara now reformulates Rava's statement. Kilachar Yad. Rava didn't mean that you're not allowed to do this mishmush to manipulate the rectum, but he meant you should do it kilachar Yad. When you hold this pebble in your hand, hold it in an unusual way, like behind your hand. And that means that Malecha Shabbos, even if in the worst case scenario he removes hairs from that area, but that's done kilachar yad, that's not chayev. The Torah says moleches machshevetz, it's got to be a perfect way, but not an unusual way. Omer Rav Yanai, im yesh makom kavu lebeis hakneset, beis hakise, is then melo hayad, v'im lav behechrea. He says the following. You know what? If you have a bathroom that you always use, it's called kavua. So then during the course of Shabbos, you might have occasion to defecate more than once. We're going to allow you to take out a whole handful of pebbles. And if you don't use them all in the first round, at least you have them for the second round. And there's no muktzah on this entire handful of pebbles. But if you don't have your set bathroom, let's say you live in a house and you know, you don't have enough space to designate for a bathroom, so you go out somewhere in the woods. So then he says, we're only going to allow you to take hechrea. Hechrea means the middle of those three shiurim. We started with an egos, and then we went on to a we started with a kezayis, then we went on to an egos, and then a kebetza. So they should be the size of an egos. And that means that we're only going to allow you to take three such stones out because we don't assume that you'll need any more. Midocha ktana shel besamim. Now there's a kind of a stone that they use to crush spices, which in fancy English is called a mortar, M-O-R-T-A-R. Amar av sheshes. Wait a second, this is what's called a klisha malachto le'isa. We don't grind things on Shabbos. And now he wants to take this piece of stone that's designated for grinding and use it to, pardon the expression, wipe himself. He says, "Im yesh aleha aid mutar." You need aid. Aid is always, which literally means testimony. Aid is used in the Shas to refer to vestiges, right? You know, some sort of like if you have blood coming out and you use a cloth to get those vestiges of blood, you know, that's left. So here there's vestiges of the tsoa, of the feces. So that means that this was already used on one occasion at least for this purpose. So it's not exclusively dedicated as a mortar, you know, for grinding. And therefore you're allowed to use it. Now, the implication here is that you're allowed to use a stone, now we're talking health here, you know, Talmudic medicine, you're allowed to use a stone more than once. So, Meisve, we have a braisa, Asara Dvarim Mevim Es Ha'odim Lidei Tachtonios. Right there, you know, in the rectal area, there's a common illness called Tachtonios in the Lashon HaGemara, which we call it hemorrhoids. And there are 10 things, most of them are food that you shouldn't eat that'll cause hemorrhoids. And the most important one for our purpose on this list of 10 is going to be reusing a stone that was used previously. V'eluhim, these are the 10. Ochel, aleikonim, aleikfonim, lulavikfonim. We're talking about the leaves of certain different things like reeds or grapevines. Or other kinds of grapevines, shoots of grapevines, leaves of grapevines, these things are not good for the digestive system, and they may cause all sorts of kinds of constipations. It's not healthy for the large intestine. Morige behema below melach, there's certain parts of the animal, certain parts of the kishkes of the animal that are called rigid. We'll give a couple of examples. We have the lining of the stomach of the animal is very thick and rigid. The throat of the animal. These are parts of the animal that you should not consume because they create hemorrhoids if they don't have an addition of salt. The salt apparently softens them. Shidro shel dag, right? The skeleton of a fish. Again, I don't know anyone who eats that stuff, but it should be avoided. Dag moliach, a piece of herring, shelo bishel called sarko, and it hasn't been prepared and cooked properly. Hashose shimre yayin, right, the parts of the wine that have sediments and they float to the top, and he starts drinking that stuff. That's not good Hamakaneach besid ubecharsis, if he wipes himself with sid, sid we said was a kind of a lime that's used to make plaster, or a sharp piece of pottery, none of these are very healthy for the body. Vamakaneach betzror shekinach bo chavero. And if he's using a pebble, a stone that was already previously used by another person, the yeshomim af hatola atzmo beveis hakise, he squats and he holds up his body without sitting on a toilet, without sitting on something that's holding up his body, and that position is not good for the anal opening. So we see clearly from this brisa that you should not be reusing a stone. You know, there's no recycling here. So the Gemara says, Lokasha habilach habiyovish. The Gemara gives three different answers to this question. The first answer is that what do you find on this piece of stone? Do you find that it was used recently and it's still moist? The feces there, the shirayim, the vestige of feces are moist. That's not a good idea. But yavesh means it was used who knows when, and it's already dried up. That's not so terrible. A second answer, yibayis ema kan mitzad echad v'kan mishneit stodim. Right? The stone was used on one side. As we said before, to wipe yourself, you use a flat surface that comes to a... And he finds vestiges on one side. He's going to allow to use the other side, and that's not going to cause any medical problems. And it's not muksa because it was already used for wiping. Ibai said a third answer, hadi dei hadechavre. And the Gemara is not sure about this, but the Gemara throws out a possibility that the only danger of creating some disruption down there is if you use a stone that was previously used by someone else. And if you take a look at the brisa that we just learned, it says, Shekinech bo chavero. So, you know, Shimon cannot use a stone that was used by Reuven. Omele Abaye l'Rav Yosef, Gishomim v'netashtashu mahu. What happens if you clean the stone? Or, for example, rainwater falls down and cleans the stone. So now, does it lose its status as a stone that was already used in the past? Amalei, imri shumam nikar mutar. Now, you might say that since it's completely clean, then, you know, there's no connection to the past history of this stone, and therefore it's mukta. But he says that if you can still see, you know, some markings of the original use, even though it's been wet by the rainwater, then it's mutter. Bamine Rabba Bar Shilo Me Rav Chizda. Now we're on Daf Pei Aleph Amid Beis. Here's the suffix. Maula Halosam Achrov Lagag. Until now we've been speaking about the prohibition of mukta, that a stone is muktzah, and we want it to be lenient for the sake of wiping oneself. What about tircha? There's another prohibition on Shabbos, that we're not supposed to expend too much energy. So are we going to allow him to schlep the stones all the way up to the roof? Omalei, gadol kavod abrio shedoches losas eshevat Torah. For the sake of kavod abrios, we're going to permit whatever we have to permit. And this is based on a Gemara Bava Metzia, which is called Zaken V'Eino L'Fich Vodo. And that means that an elderly gentleman, or maybe he's a scholar, and he finds sheep or some other animal that's roaming around the streets, and is a mitzvah of returning a lost object, he's not allowed to look the other way, Lo Tucha L'Salim, but here the Torah says, Kovet Abrius, for him to pick up this sheep and haul it onto his back and carry it, that's going to undermine his dignity. So we see how great of an emphasis the Torah puts halakhically on the dignity of a person. And if he needs these stones to wipe himself, then even if it means not only leniency as far as muktzah, but even as far as tircha, this extra work of schlepping it up to the roof, it's going to be permissible. Yosef Mar Bere, I'm sorry, Yosef Meremar, Meremar was sitting, v'ka'amar leila ha'shmaitita, and he was relating this halacha. Esve Ravina l'Meremar, so Ravina objected. And he said, we have a braisa, Rabbi Elezer Omer, notel adam kisam mi shelefonov, lachzos boshinov, v'chachamim omrim lo yitol, etc. We'll get back to that in a second. So this braisa records a machlokes about using a toothpick. And he did not prepare this wood before Shabbos. And now he has a situation where he's got food that's trapped in between his teeth. He doesn't look so handsome, you know, he needs a chip of wood in order to remove that splinter, that piece of meat or whatever it is that's caught between his teeth. And Rabbi Eliezer says, we're going to allow you to move muktzah, this wood chip, that is a classic case of muktzah, for the sake of kavod abrios, because you don't look too good if you don't clean your teeth. The chachamim omrim, no. For the sake of kavod abrios, we're not going to allow you to take this wood chip and use it as a toothpick. Elemina avus shel behema. Right, unless this wood chip was pre-prepared before Shabbos to feed an animal, and therefore it's not muktzah. But we see clearly that even for the sake of kavod abrios, the chacham were not willing to be matir muktzah. So why should they be matir taking the stones up to the roof? Hachi hash, the Gemara says, is no comparison. Hasam, in the case of a person who eats a meal, and he should be preparing himself to remove these pieces between his teeth. So he knows already beforehand that he needs to prepare toothpicks. That's why I always tell my wife we should put toothpicks on the Shabbos table, right? He says, Adam kovea makom l'suuda. A person knows exactly where he's going to eat, and he should have prepared these chips beforehand. And we're not going to be flexible here because we want to get him in line, so to speak. But hacha, if you're talking about stones, and he wants to use it for wiping himself, is adam koveya makom lebeis hakise? Are you telling me that he has one specific place where he defecates and he relieves himself, and there he should place the stones? You can't predict, you know, he may be on the road, he may be on the move, he may be here, he may be there, and the only place that now he can find privacy in order to defecate is only on his roof. So for this case, we can't, you know, there's no possibility of saying, let's train him and put him in shape over here and make sure he always prepares them. Prepares them where? He doesn't know where in any given circumstance he's going to have to relieve himself. Amar Rav Huna, Osur Lefanos, Besode, Bestay Near, Beshab. Stay near what they used to do in a field. They didn't always plant in the field. Very often they would plow the field and leave the field open, you know, those furrows would be open, different rows, so that the rainwater would seep in and the ground would, instead of depleting itself of its resources, it would strengthen its ability and therefore it would produce more. So now a person has to find a place to defecate. He goes out to the field and he finds a stay near where the furrows are open and the plowing is there. And Rav Huna says, you're not allowed to do this on Shabbos. My taima. What's the reason that he prohibits it? The Gemara can only justify this being usher even during the week. Because when a person goes out to defecate, and the ground has been plowed, inevitably what he's going to do is he's going to have to step on top of the ground, the earth, flatten it out, and it's no longer fit for planting. So, Ilema, if that's what Rav Huna has in mind, Mishum de Davsha, Davsha means that he stomps on the ground, and when he stomps on the ground of this plowed furrows, he's going to destroy the Harisha, the the plowing is afilu b'chol nami. He's not allowed to do that even during the week. That's a ben adam. That's a dine momentous question. That's a monetary question. He's causing a loss to his friend. Ella, what are you going to tell me? Mishum asavim. That perhaps we have a real Shabbos problem. Why? Because the stones that he might use to wipe himself after he defecates out in the field might be stones that have sort of moss on them or grass on them that are growing on the stones. You know, if you've ever been on a tiyul, you'll see that there are stones that have grass growing on them. So he may be pulling out that grass. Gemara says, that's not an issue. Ha'omer eish lakish, tzror sha'olu bo'asovim, a stone that has grass growing on it, mutul kanefbo. You're allowed to wipe yourself even if you detach the grass. Why? Because the grass is not growing from the ground. It's not mechubo lakarka. And tolesh, which means to remove something from its place where it grows, that's only if it's growing on the ground. So wait a minute. Let's look at the Sefer of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says that hatolesh mimenu b'shabbos, if he removes the grass from the stone that's growing on a stone, is chayev chatas. So how can Reish Lakish say that you're allowed to use this stone to wipe yourself, and he'll remove the grass from the stone in the process, and removing grass from a stone is considered meleches tolesh or kotzer, it's considered harvesting, because that's where the grass grows. Even though it doesn't grow, it's not attached to the ground, but it grows from the stone. So the answer has to be that Reish Lakish holds that if you use the stone to wipe yourself, and inadvertently it pulls off some of the grass, that's called a davar she'eino miskaven. He doesn't have intention to do so. And Reish Lakish holds like Rav Shimon that davar she'eino miskaven is okay on Shabbos. If that be the case, why does Rav Huna say that on Shabbos you're not allowed to go out and defecate in the field? Ella, but rather the reason why Rav Huna prohibits you from defecating out in the field, a plowed field, is Dilma nakit mi iloi vishadal itatoi. He may take a stone that's on the top of this furrow, right? The furrow has a certain height on it, so on the ridge of the furrow, he takes a stone and he throws it into a hole, right? Because the furrow has the hole and the two sides that go up. So he may, while he's defecating, push one of the stones into the hole. So what's so terrible about that? Umechayev mishum de Rabba. And he'll be in violation of Shabbos because of the statement of Rabba. The Omar Rabba says, Hoysalo guma utmama. If you have a hole and you fill it up, and it depends where that hole is. If you flatten out the ground in your house, that's called meleches bona, then you're building something. You're improving the house. If on the other hand it's out in the field, then you're preparing it for zriya, for planting, by flattening the ground, and then you're chayev for meleches choresh. Choresh means whenever you prepare the ground for planting. So therefore, Rav Huna prohibited defecating in an open field where the furrows form a, so to speak, a V-shaped, and he might push one of the stones into this hole, and without knowing that he's violating Meleches Choresh, and he's preparing the ground and improving it for planting. Gufa, let's go back to Reish Lakish. Om Reish Lakish Tzor Sha'olu Bo'asovim Mutil Kaneach Bo'vatolish Mimeno B'Shabbos Chayev Chatos, that if he detaches grass from a stone on Shabbos, then he's chayev for Meleches Tolesh. Om Rav Papi Shmamino Mid Reish Lakish, let's derive from Reish Lakish that Hai Parfisa Shari Litaltule. So I can tell you what a parfisa is. I'm not sure if I can tell you why you're allowed to move it according to Rav Papi. A parfisa is what's called an otzitz nakuv. It's a flower pot that's perforated. And the plant that's inside the flower pot sucks up the nutrients through the holes on the ground. And Rav Papi says that according to Reish Lakish, she understands that you're allowed to move this around from one place to the other. In other words, let's say the vase is located here, point X on the karka, you can move it to point Y and push it over. Why? Because in the case of Reish Lakish, what happens? Even before he wipes himself with the stone that has grass growing on it, he lifts up the stone. Why isn't that itself considered meleches tolesh? Right, the stone apparently is sucking up some nutrients from the ground. The very moment that he lifts up the stone, he is now oker davar migidulo, he's cutting off the stone from though that source of sustenance. But the answer is that Reish Lakish holds that the moving of the stone per se is not a problem. Why? Because the stone is not attached to the ground. It may be sucking the nutrients from the ground, but it's not actually mechubra lakarka. It's not attached to the ground. Says Rav Papi, therefore, if I take a flower pot and I move it from one place to the other, even though I'm changing the nutrients, if you follow what I mean, the what's called the yanika, the nourishment, but it's not mechubra lakarka, it's not connected to the ground. Maskif lo Rav Kahana, Rav Kahana says, wait a minute, you don't have a right to draw that conclusion. Im omru litzorech, yomru shelo litzorech. The only reason why Reish Lakish allowed you to lift up this stone was because you have a definite need. You need to clean yourself after you defecate. So for that, he's going to allow an isur derabanan, meaning, although it's not attached to the ground and moving it from place to place is not an isur d'oraisa, but derabanan, rabbinically, it's called tolish. It's as if it was attached to the ground because it sucks the nutrients from the ground. Reish Lakish is going to permit this in the case of the stone with the grass growing on it for the sake of kavod abrios. That's called litzorech, for wiping himself. But you want to move a flower pot from one place to the other, for what reason? You know, you don't like the way it looks here, you want to look here. That's going to be asur mirabanan. Om Rabbi parfisa hoil vi asur li yadon. If you're talking about a parfisa, a flower pot, that's perforated, then lema be milsa, let me add a halacha with regard to this flower pot. And he says, hayamunach al gabi karka, if you have a flower pot that's on the ground, you're not allowed to remove it because it's sucking nutrients. It has yanika from the karka. You want to put it up on your seidos. You know, you have some sort of a bunch of pegs with a round thing and you want to hang up the flower pot on it. You're, in effect, on a derabanan level, detaching it from the ground, and that you're not allowed to do. And in the opposite direction, instead of munach al gabi karka, v'nicha al gabi yaseidos, the opposite, hoya munach al gabi yaseidos, it was on top of this contraption that's being held up by yaseidos, v'niach al gabi karka, now he wants to put on the karka, now in effect he's planting it, because now the flower pot, through the holes, is going to suck the nutrients from the karka. Now it's a little bit odd here that Abai used the word chayav. We're only dealing with the abundance here, so Rashi and Tosis point out that you shouldn't take the word chayav literally here. We're only talking about a violation of the abundance. There are many cases where the Chazal use the word chayav, but they're only referring to a derabanan. Om Rav Yochanan, asur lekaneach becheres b'Shabbos. You're not allowed to use a piece of pottery to wipe yourself on Shabbos. My taima. If, Ilema, you're going to tell me shum sakana, because since this is a broken piece of pottery, he may injure himself in the anal areas, afil b'chol nami. Then even during the week this should be prohibited. Why did Rav Yochanan focus our attention on Shabbos? Ela, mishum kshafim. All right, because of witchcraft, I mean, the sorcerers knew that if they found the shard that had some of your feces on it, they could give you the spooks, as we're going to learn tomorrow, Mir Sashem, is that afilu b'chol nami, even so, that would be prohibited even during the week. Vela mishum hasharas nimin. But rather, when he uses this very sharp piece of pottery, then he's going to cut the hairs that surround the rectal area. And the Gemara says, I don't understand that, because Dovashenim is Kavinu, he has no intention whatsoever of removing those hairs. Amaluhu Rab Nosim Bar Oshia Gavra Rabba Omer Milsa. Rab Yochanan, who's a great scholar, said this halacha. Name of a timer. We have to find some sort of explanation. Lo mi boid b'chol di asur. Rabbi Yochanan meant to imply that during the week for sure it's asur, either because of health reasons or because of witchcraft. Avol b'Shabbos, but you might think that maybe on Shabbos we're going to allow him to use these, you know, these pieces of broken cheres. Why? Hol v'ika toras klielav shapir dum. You know, so we have a choice. He can either use stones, which are a little more healthy and less dangerous, or he could use this broken piece of pottery. The broken piece of pottery has a shame kli. It's not mukta, because a broken shard of pottery can be used to hold up something very small. Is therefore in the choice between, you know, the lesser of two evils, maybe we tell him, okay, let's be a little flexible on the health issue for the sake of the Shabbos issue. Kamash Malon, Rabbi Yochanan says no, that we're not going to allow him to do this. It's a dangerous kind of thing, and even for the sake of minimizing the damages as far as Shabbos, we have to prohibit this. Rav Amasni le mishum hasharas Neiman. He understood that Rabbi Yochanan was worried about using this shard of pottery because it might cut the hairs off. The kashale Rabbi Yochanan, and based on his understanding, he had a problem because of another statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Mi amar Rabbi Yochanan osul kaneh becheres b'Shabbos, because we're afraid that if he uses this sharp piece of pottery, he may remove hairs. Alma, we must assume, therefore, if Rabbi Yochanan said you can't use this pottery on Shabbos, that Dovr Shenim is Kavin is awesome. That he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, that even if you do a malacha without Kavana, you have no interest in cutting off hairs, it's awesome. But Vama Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan has another statement in which he says, Halacha Kistam Mishnah, we always paskin like a Mishnah that's anonymous, that doesn't have a name to it. Utnana, we have a Stam Mishnah in Mesech de Nazir, that Nazir Chofefu Mefasves, have a low Sorek. A Nazir is allowed to shampoo his hair, even though he's not allowed to cut off any hairs, because it's going to happen with Dovr Shenim Miskavin. He doesn't have Kavana to remove hairs. But he's not allowed to comb his hair because that's called a psik resha. Then we know for sure he's going to rip out hairs. But this Mishnah, which is a Stam Mishnah, certainly reflects the Shita of Rav Shimon, that Dovr Shenim Miskavin is Mutter. And Rabbi Yochanan says, Halacha Kistam Mishnah, Elamach Varta. Therefore we have to go back Kidder Rabbi Nosson Bar Oshia to the original understanding of Rabbi Nosson Bar Oshia, that this is a health problem. It's not a problem of Shabbos because he's removing hairs. Rabbi Yochanan couldn't care less about the hairs because that's a Dovr Shenim Miskavin, and he paskins like the Stam Mishnah in Nazir, that if it's not a psik resha, then it's mutter. But we have a health problem, and the Chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan is that we're not going to be lenient on the health issue for the sake of improving the Shabbos issue, but rather we're going to prohibit this on Shabbos just as we prohibit it during the week, because this is a kind of dangerous situation, either because he might puncture something in his rectal area with the sharp shard, or because of kishuv, because of witchcraft, which Amir Tzashem will talk about tomorrow. The Gemara wants to know what are these witches able to do if they get a hold of a shard that was used to wipe oneself and remove feces. Let's make a note of it. We're on the bottom of Pei Aleph, Amid Aleph, and we are up to my kshofim, which is 6 lines up from the bottom of Pei Aleph, Amid Beis.